To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Hello, everybody. This is Michael McAvoy, and welcome to Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. We're going to be talking about health and nutrition today, and kind of a controversial subject, the idea of changing what you thought was a good diet all along. We've had lots of decades of research that say one thing, yet there are other points of view. And so we're going to be talking to Nina Teicholz today about her new book, The Big Fat Surprise. We'll just dive right into it. So Nina, why don't you tell me about the genesis of this book?
So my book lays out the evidence that saturated fats, the kind of fats in meat, cheese, dairy, butter that we have so long believed are bad for health, that the evidence supporting that belief really is has been re-examined and has really crumbled. It really, the idea that those are, that saturated fat causes heart disease goes back to the 1950s when the nation was facing a heart disease epidemic that had come seemingly out of nowhere to become the nation's number one killer. President Eisenhower had a heart attack in 1955, and there was one man named Ansel Keys who proposed that the answer was that we were eating too much saturated fat. Saturated fats raises total cholesterol. In those days, that was all you could measure, and that clogged the arteries and caused heart disease. And he got that idea before it was ever tested in any kind of scientific trial. He got that idea and planted it into the American Heart Association in 1961, our very first anti-saturated fat dietary guidelines. And the history really unfolds from there. There were a number of trials that never really could show that saturated fat caused heart disease, but we've been living with this idea for so very long that it seems almost impossible to believe otherwise. I mean, I did nearly a decade of research into the science. I'm an investigative reporter and looked into all of the science. A number of groups of scientists have also gone back and examined all the original nutritional research that was supposed to show that saturated fats are bad for health, and found that, in fact, the evidence is not good and has never been good that saturated fats cause heart disease or obesity or diabetes, or that fat in general does.
Okay, well, now I'll just tell you that I come from what I have adhered to is a low-fat diet. In fact, I had a checkup earlier this year, and I was told that basically my cholesterol is a little bit high, so you know, why don't you go ahead and stop eating the saturated fat, stop eating the eggs, cut back your meat and chicken, etc. And, you know, from my own personal experiences, like I have read books by Dean Ornish, who had 30 years of patients where they were, you know, on their deathbed with heart disease and clogged arteries, and went on his program, which is a low-fat, plant-based, whole foods, you know, plus other things. But so, you know, when you see like the reversal of heart disease by following things like that, how can you argue that that adding saturated fat is a good idea?
Dean Ornish's all of his diet books are based on one study that he did with 20 people in it, and which is really a tiny study. He has all of his patient files, his own anecdotal experiences. But you know, that's why we do science. You really can't rely on anecdote. You do big, you know, big clinical trials. I mean, compared to that one tiny study, there have been now numerous large trials with thousands of people in them over long periods of time, including up to 2 years. The largest ever trial of the low-fat diet tested 50,000 women on that diet. You need large groups of people because there's so much human, there's so much variation in metabolism. And that study on the low-fat diet showed that the low-fat diet did was completely ineffective in preventing obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. And then since that study, that one, the results came out in 2006, in the last decade, there have been a number of large clinical trials looking at the low-fat diet, comparing it to a higher-fat diet. The higher-fat diet always performs better in terms of outcomes for diabetes and heart disease and obesity. There's in numerous trials now on all kinds of populations, including diabetics, men, women. The higher fat diet always does better. A very high fat diet of an Atkins kind of diet also has done better. It was put up against a Mediterranean diet, and that Atkins style diet on hundreds of people, this study that lasted a full 2 years, that study showed that the Atkins style diet did the best in terms of, again, markers for obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. So I think that the last decade of clinical trials clearly shows that a higher fat diet is better than a lower fat one, and all the risk factors and biomarkers that that we know really measure can predict heart disease. So the names most well associated with the very low fat diet, Dean Ornish, again, his study was on 20 people lasting, it was a year, but it was, you know, a tiny number of people. And then there's another study that people refer to a lot called the China study, which wasn't a clinical trial at all. It was what we call an epidemiological study and only shows an association. It can never show causation and was never peer reviewed. So I think people don't realize that the basic scientific evidence upon which some of these diet empires are based is really not very rigorous. There's kind of a disconnect between like the number of books and cookbooks and the size of those popular diets and what they're actually based on.
So what do you feel though? I have not read through your book, but it is 500 pages, so I imagine you're probably citing a lot of data and studies in there. But there are studies, you know, over long periods of time. The Harvard study.
That's, again, an epidemiological study called the Nurses Health Study. That's also another study that can show associations, but not causation. That's just such an important point. I mean, that Nurses Health Study was the one that generated the advice for women to use hormone replacement therapy and also to take vitamin E supplements, which when those ideas were properly tested in clinical trials, they found that actually hormone replacement therapy was doing women damage to their health, and also vitamin E supplements. So, and those ideas had been generated by the Nurses Health Study. You have to be very careful with those kinds of results. They have led to bad public health advice.
Okay, so the flip side of it is that with the idea that you're citing in the book, there's really not decades of research to show that that's efficacious either. Wouldn't that be true?
You mean a high fat diet?
Yes.
So, as I'm saying, the best clinical trials of up to 2 years. So, a trial of 2 years is considered what is considered long enough for any kind of side effects to show up. And so, there have been a number of 2 year clinical trials on large numbers of people that have shown this diet not only to be safe but to be highly efficacious for good health. There's also the 4,000 years of human history where meat, cheese, butter, dairy have been at the heart of human meals, going back to the feast for Odysseus. There's a tremendous written human record of our eating these foods. Americans in the 1800s ate 3 to 4 times more red meat than we do today. We ate far more butter, far more lard. This was before the epidemics of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. And there's just tremendous data to show, written in cookbooks and in myths and, you know, Dickens' pork pie, you know. I mean, there's a vast amount of literature to show that this is what humans ate.
Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Those are on the chat. We're talking with Nina Teicholz, and she's talking about her new book, The Big Fat Surprise. We're actually going to get a copy. Nina's got a copy for us. We'll be giving that away in just a little bit, and so stay with us. If you have any questions for Nina, please type them into the chat, and I'll see if we can get to those. So, Nina, what would you say, or in the book, what is it said about the obesity epidemic? My understanding is that it's basically because we've started consuming processed foods and a lot of carbohydrates, that don't have a lot of nutrition. Is that what you found in your book?
It is true that Americans now consume 25% more carbohydrates than we did in the early 70s, and that is, I mean, the obesity epidemic really took off in 1980 when the U.S. government got behind the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. That was the first ever USDA dietary guidelines came out in 1980. That's when the obesity epidemic really started to turn upwards, that curve. And I think processed foods is not as meaningful a term. I mean, things are processed in all different kinds of ways, but carbohydrates, the science of the last decade really points to carbohydrates being implicating them in obesity and diabetes, particularly if not heart disease. And that's because carbohydrates are basically, they break down, I'm talking about refined carbohydrates are sugar, high fructose corn syrup. They're both about 50% glucose, 50% fructose. And the glucose triggers the release of insulin in your body, which is the king of all hormones for socking away fat. You basically cannot get fat without insulin circulating in your bloodstream. If it's circulating chronically, you're constantly socking away fat and you're unable to use your own fat stores for energy. Fructose seems to have adverse effects on blood lipids, which lead to heart disease, metabolic syndrome and heart disease. So the two of these always come together, whether they are in sugar, high fructose corn syrup, or in fruit. Our fruits are much sweeter than they used to be, and those really pack a punch to your system. I think that the science of the last decade has really congealed around this idea, this new hypothesis about what causes these chronic diseases. And by the way, that idea was also very alive in the 1970s. There was a professor named John Yudkin who had the idea that sugar, which had increased rapidly, our consumption of sugar had increased rapidly in the early part of the 20th century, and he came up with the idea that it was sugar. But one of the things about nutrition science that I describe in my book is how it's like a blood sport between people, scientists with competing hypotheses. So Yudkin was really shot down in a vicious way by scientists, including that one scientist I described earlier, Ansel Keys, who literally would call Yudkin names in scientific papers and just nutrition science is less of a reasoned field of sober debate than it is a highly sparring jungle of competing views. It's really much different than people think.
It's very frustrating. I was going to say that, that we all try to do our best to follow the guidelines that are given by the professionals, and yet, hundreds and thousands of books every year come out that move us back and forth along the pendulum of low fat, high fat, So it's frustrating. It's a little frustrating there. But let's talk.
It is. It's completely maddening. Sorry, just to say one thing. And one of the things that I do in my book is I really describe for people why there is this back and forth of nutrition headlines. What kinds of studies lead to that? Why does that happen that we have so much conflicting health advice? And I unpack that for people so they can finally understand it for themselves.
Do you believe that there's an agenda? Some people say that there's the industries, various groups are wanting to push a certain point of view, and You know, I mean, I could ask you if you had any backers from the, you know, from the meat industry that, you know, got behind you for this book, you know.
Yeah. So first of all, I have no industry backing or support at all in writing this book. And that does stand in contrast to most nutrition researchers who receive industry funding for their research or their centers or some form going to conferences, or all the conferences are underwritten by the food industry. The food industry is a huge player in nutrition science and has been even before the National Institute of Health. There was something called the Nutrition Foundation in the 1940s that realized they could get Americans to eat what they wanted by influencing science at its very source, getting to funding the basic scientific studies that were done that underpin our nutrition recommendations. I mean, people think of, you know, they understand like big pharma messes with drug science, but they don't realize to what extent that's also true on the food side. And there are interested industries on all sides of this issue. And there's a lot of accusations that fly back and forth. Oh, you're supported by the egg people, and you're supported by the meat industry, and you're supported by the, you know, big food. It is true. I mean, there's certain ways in which I document that to show that really the big food companies are the cereal makers, Kellogg's, Standard Foods, Procter & Gamble. They really seem to have triumphed in this debate. I mean, we're told to eat 60% carbohydrates. That is their products. We're told to eat vegetable oils over meat, cheese, and dairy. Vegetable oils is the product of some of the largest companies in America, ADM, Monsanto, Cargill, Bunge, gigantic companies. And, you know, for example, the American Heart Association was virtually launched as a national organization by Procter & Gamble, maker of Crisco oil. The American Heart Association was a tiny little sleepy cardiologist society until Procter & Gamble designated it to be the recipient of a radio show that it sponsored. And overnight, the AHA got $1.7 million. Its coffers were filled, and it became the national leader in this field that we know it to be today, recommending Crisco oil over saturated fats.
And I guess what you're pointing to there is that people have to be very skeptical with whatever information they're receiving, because it's not always known who's behind it. So I think it's good that your book, you know, you did it on your own. You didn't rely on funding from any other sources. So that alone is, you know, a good thing there. Now, let me ask you, for on a practical level, talk a little about what the diet would look like. You know, break
what
it down a little
bit. What is a high-fat diet? So a high-fat diet, again, numerous clinical trials show that to be a healthier diet on all kinds of outcomes. And it's very hard to get to a high-fat diet without eating some kind of animal foods, because otherwise you're drinking bowlfuls of olive oil like an Italian peasant, or you're eating big handfuls of nuts. It's hard to get there. So a high-fat diet means, you know, for breakfast, instead of granola or cereal, having bacon or eggs, or full-fat yogurt, because the low-fat version is extremely high in sugar. Most low-fat yogurts have the sugar equivalent of a Hershey's bar. For lunch, instead of grain salad, you might have chicken salad, egg salad, tuna fish salad instead. And you might just have the salad and skip the bread on the sandwich. And then for dinner, you can have, it's the centerpiece of your meal, not just chicken and fish, but also red meat. There's nothing to show that the saturated fat in red meat is bad for health. Red meat is far more nutrient dense than chicken. Most people don't know that. It has many more nutrients, including some that are hard to find, like folate, selenium, iron, hard to find not in much smaller amounts, or if not at all, in chicken. And you know, smaller portions don't make the centerpiece of your plate, the pasta or the brown rice, or, you know, or a lot of bread. I mean, those foods, we should just eat less of those. And don't skimp the fat. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, I can understand about eating protein, but the fat, people are so uncomfortable with that notion because they think the fat they see is going to become the fat on their bodies, right? It's just this tragic homonym.
Mm-hmm.
But with too much protein without the fat gives you nitrogen poisoning. You really have to have the fat. It's what fills you up and satiates you and is essential for your health.
Okay, so you kind of pointed to things, but let's talk about what percentage of the different food groups would be what you're after, you know, greens, carbohydrates, and proteins.
So these scientific studies that look at high-fat diets, they're looking at carbohydrates of 15 to 20% of calories, and then fat at over 50%, and then the rest protein, maybe 20, 25% protein. Carbohydrates incorporates, that's then the cat's like turning the food USDA food pyramid upside down. So then that comprises all of your starchy vegetables and your fruits, which are high in fructose, and your grains. And then you can have more of the non-starchy vegetables like greens, cauliflower, mushrooms, and fruit to a certain extent. But then you really try to concentrate your calories more in, fats. Chicken, fish, red meat, dairy, whole fat dairy, eggs, again, traditional foods going back thousands of years, and they're not, the saturated fat that they contain has not been shown to be damaging for your heart health.
Right. You mentioned fats versus proteins. Now, a lot of high protein sources also are high fat. Is it one and the same, or are we talking about different things?
No, I mean, animal foods basically are like perfect little food packages. They contain protein and fat together in exactly the right proportion. So it's a certain amount of protein coupled with the fat, also extremely nutrient dense. A lot of, you can only get vitamin B6 and B12 in animal foods. And you can only digest the fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K, with the fat that they come in. So if you're just eating, if you're having non-fat milk, you cannot fully digest the vitamins A and D that it contains without the fat, because fat is like the spoonful of medicine that makes the vitamins go down. And for that reason, vitamins in vegetables and fruit are actually less bioavailable to humans than they are in animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
So animal foods are really a perfect proportion of protein, fat, and they're, they have almost zero carbs, so they don't spike your insulin, which makes you fat.
Right. Okay. So you don't believe that people who have high levels of cholesterol and plaque in their arteries, that kind of thing, that they cannot reverse it dietarily, because although you did mention that Dean Ornish's study was small, but he did have hundreds or thousands of patients over 30 years that he put on this regimen that did show the reversal of plaque in their system. So I'm still a little bit skeptical that
right.
If someone does have heart disease, how they can go about reversing it dietarily.
Okay, so just to address Dean Ornish's studies, again, you can only rely on what he did scientifically, not on his patient files, which are anecdotal. That's why, no doctor is allowed to use his patient files. In those, it turns out that the amount of, plaque is a natural part of the aging process, and it's not the presence of plaque that causes heart disease. I mean, the understanding of heart disease has evolved a lot, and just having plaque is not reliably linked to having a heart attack. What causes heart attacks, it's now understood, is a certain kind of unstable plaque that breaks, it's oxidized plaque, it breaks off and it blocks the arteries, and that's what causes a heart attack. So the kinds of measurements that Ornish made were actually not relevant to heart attack risk. And risk of a heart attack is now, after, you know, again, 50 years of a greater understanding of what can be reliably predict heart disease, it turns out it's not total cholesterol, which is what Ansel Keys originally thought. It's not even LDL cholesterol, which in numerous clinical trials has not tracked at all with heart disease risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sorry, heart attack risk. What reliably tracks with heart attack risk is something called Lp(a), which measures your LDL particles, or and also subfractions of LDL, you know, if they're small, dense versus large, bland. These are much more subtle measures and are turn out to be far more reliable biomarkers, indicators for your actual risk. These and all of these are improved on a high-fat diet, and it doesn't matter if that fat is saturated. They are still improved. And in fact, a high carbohydrate diet worsens those indicators. So, I mean, the basic story is that our nutrition recommendations in 1960 were based on an incredibly primitive understanding of what causes heart disease, and the science has evolved a lot since then. And the Dean Ornish diet does not do well by any of these indicators, which he chooses to, you know, he chooses uniquely, he chooses to ignore them all, but, you know, his diet reduces your good cholesterol, your HDL, which turns out to be a much better predictor of heart attack risk than LDL.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say that the debate will go on until we...
There's no question.
until we have more definitive studies over long periods of time that, as you say, are actual studies, not just... collections of anecdotal data, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I would add one thing, which is that, you know, the science is really out there. What the reason that we persist in having this belief that fat and saturated fat is bad for you is that we're in the third generation of experts universally believing that. The science has really been done that revokes that. It's the science is really pretty definitive. The reason we still believe that fat and saturated fat are bad for you is really more about politics, institutional bias, and the legacy of having lived with this hypothesis for 30 years that we cannot get out of.
Right. Okay, so listen, everybody. At this point, I am going to give away that copy of Nina's book. So the first person to answer this question by typing into the chat box, the date of release of this book, The Big Fat Surprise, if you can give us the date of release, you will be the winner of that book, and we'll make sure you get a copy. So, Nina,
yes.
Where to next with your work with this subject?
Well, I'm writing this book has just been out for 2 weeks, so I'm really in the thick of talking about it and appearing on TV, radio, really just trying to get the word out about it. And I think if I were to do another book, it would be on women and children who, you know, there was no data on women and children when they were kind of roped into the low-fat dietary recommendations. It was all based on data on men,
mm-hmm.
studies on men. And women and children have really, their needs have been ignored. I mean, it turns out that children suffer nutritional deficiencies and women look especially bad on a low-fat diet in terms of their heart disease risk. And I feel like those are real. Those are issues that really need to be explored and understood.
Okay. Is there a? Do you have a website or other place that people can go in order to get more ideas? Obviously, the book is available on the major booksellers, Amazon and Barnes and Noble, etc. What else do you have that people could go look at?
Well, I do have a website. It's called thebigfatsurprise.com, and that's where you'll see reviews and media appearances. I haven't started a blog yet, but there's quite a lot of information on there, and that's a great place to start. It also has a link to the I did a piece just before my book came out. I did a story on that came out in the Wall Street Journal, which was the number one most emailed story for nearly 2 weeks, a record in recent history for that paper, and that's a really good summary article, and that's on my website.
Okay.
So I think if you're going to start, if you think that I'm crazy and you'd like to, you know, read about this in a little more detail, I would recommend reading that article first.
Okay, great. There's been, in preparing for the show, there are numerous people who have written reviews on the books, and, you know, you have quite a lot of media going on about the book right now. So just doing a search for The Big Fat Surprise will yield a lot of results. So I encourage people to go get the answers for yourself and pick up the book. It's just, I know it's just another, you know, in the debate, in the ongoing debate, but, you know, we all have to try to keep on top of things so that we're doing the best for our bodies. So, Nina, I really appreciate your joining me today, and we'd like to have you back. And you've got a new book or a new project going. That'd be great to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, everybody. There will be a replay up on YouTube very shortly. We'll also have the podcast coming out in just a couple of weeks. Thanks again, Nina.
Thank you.